Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. Today is Wednesday, Humpity Hump Day, and I can't believe it day. It's November 20th of 2013. Yes, I said it. There it is, reality. I think we have four more shows left to 2013. Oh, did you hear it? My heart just sank. Only four more. I don't even know. Not even. Yeah, four. That's it. Four more shows. So as we are winding down 2013, plenty of discoveries have been made to enhance 2014's lineup. There are so many people in my inbox. My poor assistant is not even sleeping at this point. Poor Karen, I love you, but we are now booking Sunday nights at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, keeping Wednesday 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that should allow you and offer you many more tools, many more resources, much more motivation, inspiration, excitement, drive, and just some really cool, amazing people all over the world. And frankly, I can't thank you enough for supporting my endeavor to bring you this emotional toolbox, this soul toolbox. I still haven't articulated how much I love and adore all of you and all of your support. We're over 100,000 now. Yay! Everybody clap. And Facebook fan page is going crazy. I don't even know where it's at today. But if you're not on my Facebook, feel free to give me a high five. I always have something whimsical and funny to share because laughter is the only medicine I believe in, and that's facebook.com/celiacroads. And so tune in. Don't forget that my birthday is coming up, and so is Christmas and Hanukkah and Kwanzaa and Thanksgiving and all of these things you guys send me beautiful cards for, and I love you, love you, love you, love you, love you. But I don't want to buy another storage unit to hold the rest of this year's cards. So can you do me a huge favor and send a dollar or two or three to Celiac Sprue Association and just say happy birthday or happy holidays, Rusty, and that would be the best way to support my new endeavor for 2014, which is to raise a bazillion, trillion, billion dollars for celiac awareness, research, and education on an international level. And I know a lot of you out there internationally could really, 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 really use some more resources. So help me to help you to help me. All right. So today's guest I am so fascinated with. He is a cutie patootie. He is wild and whimsical and fun, which you know how much I love that. His name is Brian Reeves, and evidently he was the captain in the Air Force. Can you believe that? But if you see him now, he's like this amazing, whimsical, loving, bright, spirited speaker on basically innovating consciousness in business and projects. And the line on his website that I almost spit my coffee all over my screen, but thank God I didn't because we wouldn't be able to have the show, was, oh gosh, where is it? I'm going to find it, but it was extraordinary because I was just having a friendly debate in regards to the words defeat on Facebook with my friend Chris. And, oh shoot, now I can't find it. Anyway, I'll find it as we talk to Brian, and he's tuned in. Let me turn him on here. All right. Come on, technology. Hello, sweet Brian. Welcome to Living and Thriving. How are you?
Hello. I am so excited to meet this guy that you just introduced. He sounds fucking amazing. Can I say that word or should I not say that? It doesn't matter.
Well, let me just do a disclaimer. Hold on. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. Any caca words that happen to pop out of anybody's mouth is all universally driven. Please
exactly.
Excuse us. And if you have children,
thank you.
Put them in the library so that they can read a book. Fair enough?
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, this guy just, he seems fabulous, and I want to, like, pinch his cheek and sit on his lap, And I want to ride the magical bus on the video that you have on your website.
Oh, that's right, the video. Oh, my gosh.
That is
so
very cute. That was fun.
Thank you.
I'm jealous
yes.
that you didn't invite me to join in. But, you know, there's always the future.
I must have got lost in the mail somewhere. That invite. I'm so sorry for that. It was a lot of fun. I assume you're talking about the Burning Man video, the music video that
yes,
we did.
Yes, the Burning Man.
Yeah.
Ode to the Burning Man. That was great.
Oh, my goodness. You know, this life is just such a remarkable adventure.
It really is. So let's back up because I am super excited, and everybody can hear that in my voice usually. I have been extraordinarily blessed. I don't know if you got to do a little research on me, and I'm not even sure how we connected, but we connected, and this is cool. But the point is, I don't know how things happen. I love the connections and let it be because it's important. But
I think it might have been the Daily Love, I think, is how we got connected.
Oh, the Daily Love. Okay.
But continue.
So who are you? Anyway, Mystery Man.
Oh, that's exactly Mystery Man. I've been trying to figure out that for 39 years. So maybe we'll get somewhere in the next hour. Maybe we'll find some clues.
That's right, we'll crack it open.
Maybe we'll crack it open. You know, it's I was a captain in the Air Force, which blows my mind as much as anybody else's. I actually still carry around my military ID, my wallet, because it's just such a reminder of what is possible in life to come from being a captain in the world's most powerful military to managing spiritual music artists and living in Los Angeles, working with, you know, people like Eckhart Tolle and Jim Carrey and transformational entertainment and writing for the Daily Love, and I mean, what a turnaround, right? And now to be actually one project I'm really super excited about is this summer I launched a project called Operation Mindful Warrior, teaching mindfulness to military veterans that are suffering from PTSD and addiction and depression, and to be able to bring mindfulness and self-awareness back into the military mind is I just never saw that coming. Absolutely.
Well, definitely connect with me so I can get more information after the show, because we do quite a bit up here in regards to PTSD. I have a friend whose husband and son both suffers from PTSD, and we do a lot of fundraising and events in New England. So
okay.
I'd like to be able to get that information afterwards. Yeah.
Excellent. And, you know, the thing that I think I really want people to know, I was sitting last night. I actually had I work with I was having dinner last night with somebody who works with one of the most famous celebrities in the world. And I was working with this, having dinner with his publicist. And he was sharing with me how here's a guy who has everything anyone could want on the planet. I mean, he can go anywhere he wants. He can have any woman that he wants. He has all the money that he needs. He's got everything. And this guy still goes through hell in his life. He still hurts at times. And we were talking about that and looking at, you know, looking at the whole social media world and what we think about people's lives. And the thing that I always really want people to know, because there's, you know, I've made a lot of unconventional choices in my life, and they've made all the difference in the world, and I love the life that I'm creating, but you know what? I'm still a guy that hurts. I'm still a guy that sometimes is really lonely. I'm still a guy that sometimes doesn't feel good when I get out of bed in the morning, and I think that's just sitting with this guy last night and hearing him talk about this guy, this celebrity that has everything. It's like, just, I think that's something that I want, because a lot of the work that I'm doing right now is about living in the truth.
Right.
And I'm writing a book about that. And that's one of the things that, you know, I've been horrified of the truth my whole life, because I've always been afraid that if I tell the truth, you won't like me. You'll reject me. You'll look down on me. You won't think I'm worthy. I won't be as cool as you, or as good as you, or I won't be enough. I won't be entertaining enough, whatever it is. And that's something that has haunted me my entire life, and I think that that's like our shared humanity of sorts.
Well, so, I think it's a social construct. We are raised to live within the precepts of our environment, whatever that means. And it's not a judgment statement, it's a reality statement. Some parents are very adamant. I grew up in the South in a time where children were seen and not heard. So, you know, there's that precept, that construct from early age of not being allowed to live in your truth, because I'm a wild and curious and rambunctious, feisty redhead. You know, really? I'm going to be quiet? I think not, honey. Really. So that was a dichotomy that I personally had to grow up with. It was really challenging. But I think for everyone in every instance, it's difficult to peel off those personal prescriptions that we were given when we were little kids as to who we're supposed to be versus who we are. So what was your discovery process in that?
Well, I realized it actually happened to me really through relationships with women. I mean, that's where it really showed
we're
up
tough.
For me in a big way. And I choose the toughest of you. I seriously needed to have my butt kicked, and women are the ones that were sent to this planet to do it for me. Seems that way. So I've gotten through a lot of that, and I'm making different choices now. But through my relationships with women is where, because I've chosen beautiful, intelligent, brilliant, insightful women that would not let me get away with anything. And, of course, they had their own dysfunctions to work through. And I always say that we're growing more functional through each other's dysfunctions, right? Because as we show up without skills in a certain interaction, then we get to go, wow, that doesn't feel good, or ooh, that hurts, or geez, I didn't do that very well, or this person, God, what, that was awful. And we kind of learn. We learn through each other being ridiculous. We learn through, unfortunately, it just seems to be how that works for us. And so, yeah, in my intimate relationships is really where the vast amount of my personal growth in between them, I read and I study and I do all the workshops. I mean, I've been a workshop junkie for 20 years, and I've sat on mountains in Chile with no food and water for days on end, and I've questioned my stressful thoughts for weeks, and I've drank ayahuasca and taken mushrooms, and I've just done all the things, all the exploration things, but
right.
In the end, it comes down to how am I in the face of this person? How am I showing up in my relationship to this other being who has a consciousness, who can witness me, and how am I showing up in that? How am I showing up for myself? I mean, that to me is where the rubber meets the road. It's right there, and that's so. I mean, that's how so much of my self discovery really, really has unfolded in the most powerful and god awful painful ways at times. Yeah.
So let me pull you back a little bit, because I have a feeling that if you and I were to ever sit in the same room, we would probably do that for 12 hours and not even realize.
Yeah.
One of those types of conversational moments, which I love. I live for that. But so let's pull you back a little bit. What kind of kid were you? What did you want to be when you grow up? Like, did you say, oh, I'm going to be in the Air Force, and then I'm going to be this crazy guy on a magical school bus making people smile? You know, how did that evolve? Did I lose you? Hello? Hello? Well, you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and currently we're having technical difficulties. I am blessed to be able to share Brian Reeves with all of you today in regards to managing your magic. And if you have any questions, do pipe in, because he is a wonderful, wonderful soul. The number here is 347-205-9443. And again, this is Rusty with Living and Thriving with Rusty. And I think Brian just tried to tune back in. Are you standing in the corner with your rabbit ears on?
Yeah, that was apparently our commercial break.
That's right. All right, so
quarter after the hour.
Right.
So I was a very observative child. I was very introverted. My parents divorced when I was 4, and I think that really, really affected me. And so I grew up kind of emotionally stunted in a way. I just was really in my head, very intellectual. I was very smart. I was a really, really brilliant kid, which also was my worst enemy, my intellect. I was so smart. I just started building an intellectual prison around me, and I lived through my ideas and my philosophies. And then I saw Top Gun when I was 14, and I wanted to fly jets and sleep with Kelly McGillis, ride motorcycles. And then I went into the military, and none of that happened. I think Kelly McGillis even turned out to be lesbian, so that was a total farce, and that may not be true. Whatever, the point is, it didn't happen.
Spreading rumors.
I didn't fly jets. I flew a jet once, and I got really ill, and I never flew again. The military was just such a mental institution, I just lived in my head. I constructed a full body condom through my ideas and my thoughts and my philosophies, and then I lived inside of that thing for the first 28 years of my life, and I couldn't feel anything. I couldn't feel my life. I was just living inside this full-body condom, and I could not feel my life. That's kind of how it was for the first 28 years of my life.
So then all of a sudden, you realize that the whole, like, Air Force thing isn't working for you, but somehow you managed to be a captain, which, you know, we'll have to sit over a cocktail to discuss that one.
Yeah. Sure.
That's a different show. And then what happened? You like emailed Oprah and said, "Hey Oprah, I want to do this project," or like, how did you get your start in this particular area?
No.
You stripped off your global condom and.
I wish. Just long story short, my dad, when I was 10 years old, married this woman who was like the Oracle in the Matrix. And this is when I was 10. So I kind of grew up schizophrenic a little bit. I grew up exposed to the mystical world of looking beneath and asking the questions. But then I call that my National Enquirer family on my dad's side. And then on my mom's side, I had the Washington Post family. It's just, you know, 2.3 kids,
right.
Dog, white picket fence, suburbs of D.C. So, but I followed that track. And no, after the military, I was useless to the world. I mean, I could not go work. I was angry at God. I was angry at life. I couldn't laugh. I couldn't cry. So I just went traveling. I went over. I left the country, and I just went. I just went walkabout on the planet. I went to Auschwitz. I went to the worst place on the planet that I could imagine. Just feel something. I was hoping that just by being in this place of such horror that it would shock me to my core and help me feel something. And it didn't work. It didn't do it. And actually getting married to a French woman is what did it. She broke my heart. She broke my damn heart. And that is what actually started cracking the shell. It took a few more years and another wonderfully horrendous relationship to really crack me open. And a lot of other things, a lot of other life interventions. But on that path, on that journey, I started working with my parents, and we had a product that melded a technology with mind-body science. And Oprah Winfrey, she fell in love with this thing, and she came looking for us. I didn't call her. She came looking for us, and it was amazing. And I got to meet her and be on her show briefly and teach her a little bit about mind-body science. It was so cool. Jet sitting all over the world, teaching people about mind-body science, but in the mainstream world, it was a luxury watch company called Goldstein, and that was incredible. That was really where I got my launch into being a bridge. I think myself as a bridge, and I know so many of us are in this world. So many of us are bridging the world of consciousness and awareness and love and healing and the rest of the world that's just into scarcity and fear and survival and money. right? We're bridges. We're acting as bridges, trying to bring these two worlds, heal the rift between these two conversations so we can show up in our fullness.
That must have been, I would have to say, with what I do and throughout my personal journey, and again, that'll be a conversation we can have a different time. Most of the listeners know my story, but I'm always, always, always humbled by those moments of really me, me. Like, yeah. If Oprah ever showed up at my door, I'd probably just buckle and be like, are you kidding? I think you're just my neighbor. My neighbor's pretty cool.
I had a heat flash when she called our office, and I answered the phone. I was the one who answered the phone when she called on some random 6 o'clock. She called. She didn't have an assistant.
Great. Yeah, she seems to be pretty authentic.
I literally had a heat flash, or a hot flash, or whatever those menopause. I was a menopausal woman for a minute. And
menopause.
Menopause. I like that. I had menopause. Yeah, I get you. I understand. It happened.
Yeah, so that's pretty humbling, and what a great experience. And then from there, I finally found the quote I was looking for at the beginning.
What is that?
It was, life is messy, stop trying not to get it all over you. As a single parent, I've changed more diapers than I can tell you. I've had more life on me.
That's
funny. Like Ghostbusters. when Slimer goes through you to give you a hug and a kiss, life. Slimer's going
life,
through
man.
You. That's life. And
life.
He's cute and fat and green and wonderful and, or you can think of him as a obstinate, gross, sticky, smelly blob, but Slimer's not like that, right? So I love that quote. Where did you come up, how did you translate that into your wild waking journey?
Yeah, I was in a relationship for many years that there was so
you
much
You did a Slimer
fear.
Too?
Huh? Oh, yeah.
I've been Slimer.
I have been Slimer. I am Slimer. I will totally slime if we hang out. Careful. But I that boy that we've taken so many
You're
days.
On. You're a boy. Cooties.
I was in a relationship where, it's just our human nature. It's like we want everything to be clean and we generate everything, right? We long for stability and things to be kind of in their straight lines and we like for life to show up predictable. I mean, we hate that, but we also love it. And I was in this relationship where that just wasn't the case. It just wasn't, life was just being messy. And my girlfriend was horrified of this reality that was emerging, that was happening for us. And it scared me too. I couldn't even face it. I'm not going to put it on her, but I realized, like, as I got out of that relationship and just looking at life, and it's like, life is just, it's fucking messy. Life is messy. It just shows up the way it shows up. It doesn't care how our minds want things to be organized. Life just does what it does. It happens. And once we can embrace the messiness of it, I think that's when we really get to start having a lot of fun and really get to start, because it's magnificent. I mean, the imagination that life has is so much bigger than the one I have. And what I've found is that just by allowing it to get on me and to be a part of it and not always constantly running around trying to squeeze germicide on life, it's like getting finger paint all over your body. I mean, there's something just so centrally delicious about life and about all the cracks in between, really. I mean, that's where so much of the magic of life happens is in the seams in between all the big events. And it's, I don't know, I love that quote. It's something, I guess, there's something that I really love wordplay, and I love playing with ideas and sentences. Like writing is my art. Writing is what really I love, I'm passionate about, and I, sometimes these things just come out of me like, life is messy, stop trying to not get it all over you, or the title of my book, which is Tell the Truth and Let the Peace Fall Where It May. And
peace as in P-E-A-C-E?
Exactly, P-E-A-C-E.
Yeah, damn good.
Tell the truth, let the peace fall where it may. I just love these little phrases, these little turns of phrase that that are so liberating. I mean, life is messy. Stop trying to not get it all over you. I think that's just such a liberating sentiment, right?
So I'm going to stop you there because I'm going to take our little voyage and do a little – we're going to hit Starbucks real quick. Yeah, me too. Where do we find more information about you? So this is your, 10-second plug.
My website, really everything is through my website, managingthemagic.com. That's where, everything's kind of hosted there. All my different projects and my blog's there, and my book. I did a video this summer. I gave up women for 30 days. Why I gave up women for 30 days. And I had nothing. It wasn't about sex.
Did you go into shock? I know a lot of my guy friends would probably end up in some sort of padded room sucking their thumb, rocking back and forth.
Yeah. It was hard. Well, that's not the right use of words. It was difficult to go to have that experience. It was challenging because it wasn't just about sex. It was about everything that I, all the little ways, all the little games I play to get attention from women because from a place of not feeling good about myself.
Gotcha.
And so I went 30 days without doing that, without indulging in those behaviors. And it was very difficult, actually, especially the first week. That was a nightmare. I actually fell off the wagon in the first week, and I landed on top of a really, really lovely woman. But we didn't have sex, but I crossed the boundaries and I had to restart the clock. And that video is on my website and just managingthemagic.com. That's where everything
is. Very cool.
That's the central hub. Thank you for that.
All right. So we're going to I'm going to pull you back a little bit because I'm dying. I am one of those women. I sword fight. I'm a martial artist. I'm whimsical. I'm tomboy. I grew up with boys. I have a handful of girlfriends, but they're they're tomboys too. So I'm really going to dive into this with abstaining from women for 30 days because I have a lot of male friends that actually listen to this show that will have a heart attack and then the gates of heaven will open up and maybe there'll be an epiphany.
I love it. Great.
I want to pull back in regards to the dichotomy of personal relationships. And again, I love how you articulated that it wasn't just sex that you were looking for.
No.
It's actually the femininity. So we'll define that. For me, I appreciate masculine energy because it's easier to get a guy to go and toilet paper somebody's house than it is one of your girlfriends. But there is a balance. I have girlfriends who will go and get petties and manis, but then my guy friends will go mudding. But I think as an individual, we seek enough femininity and enough masculinity to balance ourselves. But there's a dichotomy there because for men, males, I'll rephrase that from personal experience, males, it's okay to be a player. It's okay to play little games and pursue and be like that little tiger in the grass. But for women, our boundaries are very, very different. We're not allowed to have that aphrodite, sexual, and I actually get reprimanded sometimes because I'm a very sexual creature. I'm a gorgeous 37-year-old redhead who owns three companies. I'm fabulous. And I have no problem saying that. But then I'm like, oh, God, I haven't been laid in 6 months. And I get reprimanded. Well, you don't have a boyfriend. Well, do I really need
one? I love it.
Explain the male perspective of that dichotomy, because I know it's easier, I think.
Well. First off, I get it. And us males, we still have been taught to be ashamed of our sexuality, and I think that's partly why I grew up ashamed of being a sexual being. I think our culture has such a dysfunctional relationship with its sexuality, with our sexuality.
Agreed.
That it just comes out in different ways. You're right. For women, it comes out you're shamed into it, as in you shouldn't feel it at all. And for men, we have a different it's definitely a different orientation towards it, but I think it still comes from shame. And so in many cases, we're overcompensating. We're missing the heart. We're all focused on our penises. We're just hyper penis focused. And
is that figurative or literal?
That is literal.
Okay,
and that gotcha. And I think that's the other side of the shame equation. That's the, you know, when I was a child, basically, the choice seemed to be, you know, my penis is dirty. I shouldn't play with it. I shouldn't touch it. It's a dirty thing. Sex is dirty. We're not going to show it on TV. We're not going to talk about it. We're going to keep it in the closet. And so I figured I kind of had a choice. I could either, because I was sexual at 5 years old. I remember being attracted to girls when I was 4 or 5 years old. And somehow on the playground, they just knew to run away from me. So already I'm getting
cooties,
the message.
Duh.
I have cooties and a penis, and I should be stayed away from. So it's like I had
right.
two choices. I had two choices. I could either be a good boy and basically castrate myself and pretend that I don't feel these sexual feelings, or I could go the other route and just embrace my dirtiness. And so you're right. Let me just be a whore because that's what my culture says I am. Anyway, let me just embrace that. Let me just try to indulge in this as much as I can and play the game to get in your pants.
Right.
And I think those are kind of the choices that I was unconsciously experiencing. And I chose, because I want to be liked, I chose to pretend that I don't feel what I feel. And so that way, a girl won't run away from me. As long as she doesn't think I'm sexually attracted to her, she won't run away from me. And that has been the dysfunction that I've been trying to heal for all these years. And I didn't even know it, but, you know, I have three sisters, actually, and even two mothers. And so I've really, that game of not wanting women to run away from me, of wanting women to feel safe, and the way that I've made women feel safe is basically by not demonstrating. I'm like, a woman has to come on to me for the most part, unless she has to really make it clear to me that she's interested for me to make an advance. Otherwise, I'm horrified. I don't want to frighten you. I don't want you to run away from me on the playground. I'm still playing that insanity out in my head. But then there are the other guys, and that's most of them. A lot of my friends, a lot of people that I've known through my life, the men that are like, well, you know what, I don't care. She's going to run away, but I'm going to get her. I'm going to get her. I'm going to play that game, and I'm going to get her. She's going to run away, but watch how I do this. I'm going to get her. I'm going to get in her pants. I'm going to win. Right? So it's set up. The whole setup is dysfunctional. The whole setup is the girl's going to run away, and the guy's going to try to win.
I love, I'm hugging you from the East Coast because I love how you pointed out the beginning seeds of our sexual dysfunction as the world. It's not just our country, which is a misnomer, and I just want to clarify because this is an international radio show. I also want to clarify, if any of this offends you, I apologize. It is a philosophical debate on humanity, and part of our humanity is sexuality. All right, so my love for what you pointed out is that initial seed as a mother, as, you know, you hear and see, and kids are kids. And my daughter is freaking hysterical, but I'm very free and open, that which gives her that freedom and openness. So I hope that she doesn't have those shaming values. But growing up in the Bible Belt in the South being, you know, the tallest girl and the most outspoken and the strongest and that sort of thing, I always got into trouble anyway. I didn't have to have breasts at five in fifth grade. To get into trouble just because of my personality. But the whole thing in the South was don't play with your diddle. You're not supposed to be diddling, right? So, that's what, 2, 3, 4, 5 years of age. Yeah. But then you get into school, so you're already disgusted or taught that these parts are...
Right, dirty.
Not touchable.
Right.
But you want to touch them, but then you feel guilty, especially growing up in the South. Lord, I'm telling you, Baptist Church, whoo! Anyway, so then you realize that you have this internal clock, this urge, but it's shunned, And there's that game, that pursuit. And then some people, male or female, because I think this is a male or female thing, I don't think it's just guys, they either become so emotionally detached from the love, romanticism, cuddling, nurturing, natural peace that I think we're supposed to be, and become more of the mechanical player, one night stand. What are the other terms? Because I'm back in the dating world, and I'm just mortified after 17 years. I'm like, wow, hookups. See me after 9. It's like, wait a minute, what happened to hello? How are you? Can we go and have dinner, coffee? Like, what happened to the romance? But it seems that because of those hidden seeds from childhood, we're really emotionally detaching as a species. We're becoming work, play, no bonding, romantic, soul connection.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think we're definitely moving. I think we're moving through that. I think we're evolving through. There's been a great disparity in the quality of the sexes, but we've come from a very traditional background, which is where the man has this role and the woman has that role, and that's fine. But men, women, the feminine has been so brutally oppressed and suppressed for so long, and that combined we're dissociated from our sexuality, and our sexuality is fundamental. It's how we're all here. Sexuality is what brings us, is what keeps us coming back to the planet, is what keeps us moving. I mean, the world is fucking around us constantly. I mean, birds and bees and plants this conversation right here, you and me, we are making love right now. We're merging two worlds that are creating a third, right? That are creating new ideas and new things are new babies are being spawned off of ideas and whoever's listening, they're taking. I mean, the world is making love all the time, and we're so disassociated from our sexuality, and so it's just dysfunction all over the place, and that's why porn is one of the biggest industries on the planet, right? Because this sexuality will be expressed. Somehow it's going to be expressed. It's just going to come out. Is it going to come out healthy and in ways that are in harmony with our being, or is it going to come out in these just really awkward, painful, uncomfortable, hidden, secretive, dark shadow side ways? So,
I have to give you a high five for that as well, because you're bringing up an excellent point. I think sexual deviance, the extremes that we're starting to witness, acknowledge, and even market to a degree, legally or illegally, that type of deviant behavior, I'm seeing more and more of it, because I'm seeing more and more oppression of not only the physical sexuality, meaning male, meaning two people making love physically, but also the emotional, spiritual, and mental parts of union, conjoining, sharing, participating, and trusting. I see that as a huge mess. I'm not sure how that'll ever unravel.
Well, I live in California. I've been here for 3 years. I live in a bubble out here. I'm from the East Coast, so I grew up in Maryland. I know the culture. I know what a lot of the world is. The cops is in the military. I know a lot of the conversation that the world is stuck in. In California, there's a lot of people that are really working on telling more heart-centered, more authentic stories about our humanity. Right. I think there are a lot of good things that are happening on the planet in different places, where people are stepping up and saying, the lies that we've been told, they're lies. They're not true. Who I am is okay. My sexuality is fine. And there are more men and there are more women that are. It's an awkward, fumbly period because we're recovering from centuries of insanity around this. So we are in an awkward, fumbly period, but I think that there are a lot more men and women that are starting to integrate these various aspects of themselves and come through as more whole people. And I think it starts with just telling the truth. It starts with telling the truth about who we are. I love, there's a statistic that Facebook, it plays a part in something like 1 out of 4 divorces. Facebook is cited as a contributing factor to so many divorces.
I haven't seen that yet. Do tell.
Yes. I think that is an awesome thing. Because what it means is, you know, Facebook, the internet, we can't hide from ourselves anymore. All of the impulses and all the stuff, all the shadow stuff that for so long we've been able to engage in without anyone seeing, we can't really do that anymore. There's just no place to hide. And so that's why, well, Facebook, you know, because people are flirting, men and women, they're commenting and they're saying things, or they're having little Facebook romances or whatever the case may be. They have partners, but they're doing these things on the side, and then they get caught, whatever. I think that that's actually a wonderful thing, because we can't hide from our humanity anymore, from who we really are, and sexuality is a part of who we are. I am not necessarily a proponent of a sexual free-for-all. That's not the solution. That's not what I'm saying. But until we acknowledge our sexuality and the fact that we're attracted to all kinds of people for all kinds of reasons, it's just living in these relationships where we have to pretend that we're just only going to be attracted to one person. It doesn't mean we have to indulge in our sexuality. I love Byron Katie said, just because a man has an erection doesn't mean we have to do anything with it. And I think that's a brilliant sentiment. That's a brilliant sentiment of awareness that, yeah, we're sexual, and we don't have to do anything with it. We can, but we can be a choice, right? And right now, we're not even a choice. We are owned by this shadow. We are owned by this demon that we're refusing to embrace and dance with. And it's not even a demon. It's just part of our humanity. So I have hope. I have hope, because I see a lot of folks that are writing books, that are doing blogs, that are making films, that are creating events and doing work that's giving us permission to just be who we are.
And I think that's a great segue to the next question that I have for you, because we are down to 15 minutes, my friend. I know. That's why I said 12 hours. We still haven't even scratched the surface. But where was I going? I think in regards to being whole and authentic and truthful to yourself, which allows other people to see the real you, requires more than just sexuality in the sense of, you know, intimacy, male, one-on-one personal touching and kissing. I think it's mental, it's spiritual, it's how you represent yourself. And that's when we're going to see real healing and less deviant behavior and less, honestly, I think we would see less war. I think we'd see less greed if we actually started becoming more authentic to ourselves and owning our own behavior and acknowledging our own fears, because all of this is fear-based, right?
Well, yeah, and we're projecting so much of what's unresolved inside of us, we're projecting onto the world outside of us and expecting that the world outside of us change so that we can feel better about our lives, and that's not how it works, right? I mean, that's where all of the war and all of the scarcity thinking and the I've got to get mine at the expense, even if it's at the expense of yours. I mean, that's where all that thinking comes from, is that it's the world outside me that is going to save me. And it just, again, as I told you, one of the biggest celebrities in the world, he still suffers. He still hurts. He has everything that he wants, and he still goes through crisis. So it's just not where it's at. But until we get that and we really work to integrate these parts inside of us, of which sexuality is a huge component, where we're disassociated, that's where the world is going to heal. You know, I think the Dalai Lama said, "World peace through inner peace." Right. So
exactly.
Yeah.
And again, I just want to preface that, and you can throw things at me, Brian, if you want, but I believe that you and I both stand in the same court with this. You're not referring to world peace in intercourse. You're referring to world peace and inner peace, which is mind, body, and soul. It's not just it's not just being sexual in the sense of physical touching, kissing. Right. And so I knew you weren't going to throw anything at me. I just sometimes it's best to clarify so that individuals aren't running around going, oh, well, yeah, he said you got to screw everybody because it's really cool. Yay!
Yeah,
it's
going to
solve the world,
and
we're going to get world peace, and the bombs are going to go away because we're all having sex with each other. No, that's not what we're saying. It's metaphor.
I tried that. No, that didn't do it either.
Oh, you had sex with everyone in the world? Where was I? That was quick.
I work fast, which is not flattering, but fine.
All right, so let's talk about managing magic, which I believe will be a nice segue to the rest of what you do.
Managing the magic. Yes. I was managing a spiritual music band. We were touring around the country, and a friend of mine said, "You need to do a blog. You need to call this something. You need to do a blog because we were having such an adventure touring around the country." And I realized I was managing artists whose art reminds us that we really don't actually manage anything. Like life is happening. We're at best stewards for what's coming through us, but we're our ego thinks it's doing everything, but boy, it's just illusional. Life is happening, and we're just kind of holding on for the ride. And so managing, but there's still a role for managing. We still have to make plans. We still have to make agreements that occur in the future, and knowing that those agreements may not ever be fulfilled because I live in California. The earth could shake at any minute and change everything. I can't even trust the ground that I'm standing on to stay still indefinitely. So in managing the magic, it just kind of popped out of my head that was a great title for both my management company, the work that I do. And so, I manage projects. I manage projects that, whether it's concerts or networking events, or projects like teaching meditation and mindfulness to people. I manage projects that bring us back to the truth of who we are, managing the magic, that life, every moment is a wondrous, magical experience. We never know what comes next. We have no idea when we're going to die. It could happen today, for all we know. And yet there's a role, there's a dance that we do in managing that, and I think it's an art form because we go too far, we're completely stressed out because we can't possibly control what's going on here, but we think we can, and so we're just stressed living in that stress point. But if we come too far back, in my opinion, and I've seen this too, where we just drop our hands and say, "Well, I'm not going to do anything then." Well, then nothing gets done, and we don't, and the visions and the dreams that we have, the longings that we have to create things and. Well, it just nothing gets done. We don't, and some people are okay with that, and there's nothing wrong with either one. I just like that. I love living in that edge where we're really managing our own magic. There's something really poetic about that for me.
Well, and I think I think it's interesting to consider the possibility that you can't trust the ground where you are. We have earthquakes up here all the time, and it's so funny because people are like, "Oh my God, you do?" I'm like, yeah, just go to the geological website and you can see, but they're real deep. They're not as exciting as yours. But I have had so much adversity in my life that at this point, it's not even about trusting the ground that I'm walking on. It's about trusting myself and my determination to keep walking. So if I'm walking, I'm one of those people that I envision at this point in my life. I'm walking down the street and the ground's crumbling behind me. That's great. I'm still a step ahead because I have faith enough in myself and in the whole of the universe that what is going to be is going to be.
Yeah.
What is your take on that?
Yeah, I'm I love having plans for the future, but really what it comes down to is making sure that today is as awesome as I can make it. I literally, when I wake up in the morning, the two things, if I design it right, I'll sit for 5 minutes in silence, just sitting still for 5 minutes, and then I design my day. I come up with three or four things that I want to do today that by the end of the day, if I did 75% of them, and it's just three or four, then that will have been an awesome day.
Right.
And that's all I've got. That's all I get. All I get is today, and I'm not even guaranteed to get all of it. So, yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. I love my past. I have an amazing story. I love what I've lived through already, and I feel like I'm just getting started. I'm 39, and I feel like I'm just getting started. But
isn't that great?
Who knows? I love it.
I think it's great. I think it's great. And I think over time, and I don't know about you, but it was about 4 years ago for me, it hit me that I am always going to have more of my list of things to do, because I'm one of those notorious anal retentive types that has to have a list of things to do. I'll always have more of my list of things to do than I am going to have my day. And for years, and I mean years, most of my life, it drove myself, my other self, and my inner self bananas that I could never, ever accomplish. You know, a student, just one of those A types. And it's been about the last 4 years where I'm like, you know what? I got three things done off my list. Sweet. Wine o'clock. Coffee o'clock.
Yeah.
Go to meditate.
Yeah.
Gym o'clock. You know, whatever it is that hour means at that particular time. And there's a lot of people who I work with that I'm trying to get out of that rut. And it's very difficult if you don't have faith that it's just going to be what it is. I mean, there's nothing you can do about Father Time. You know, today is November 20th. I've got four more shows this year. That breaks my heart. But there's nothing I can do about that.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's reality. So give me three possibilities to kind of shake people out of this this mindset that there's always going to be more months than money or more lists than day, you know, those things.
I heard this long time ago. I think it's an old Irish saying. I've changed it a little bit to honor the feminine, but when God made time, she made enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was managing music bands I didn't have a break for like 3 years. And because, you know, when you're a manager, the artists, they get to take off, but the manager's constantly working. You're booking the next tour, whatever, constantly working. And then all of a sudden the band broke up, and I was left with, I didn't know what to do with myself. I started studying cats and dogs. How do you guys do nothing? How do you just sit there and do nothing and seem okay with it?
17 hours nap times.
I literally would just watch dogs and cats. I love dogs and I love cats too, but I'm such a dog guy. And I just would watch them. And I took a lot of comfort from just watching and noticing how effortlessly they just sat there for hours, seemingly content and did nothing. And I decided to learn from that because we live in a culture that we put so much importance. We worship productivity. We worship being productive, and you know, people will do anything to be productive, just so they don't feel bad about themselves not being productive. We do not value We don't value stillness in our culture, and we're stressed out and dying from heart disease as a result. And
correct.
I like that. When God made time, she made enough of it. And as I point out, one thing that I do every day is I give myself maximum four, I call them wins, four things that if I did them today would be wins. And they're not always work-related. They could be take a yoga class. They could be take a nap,
right?
But four wins, just four, never more than four, because that's about, and they're not little things like drink a glass of water. There are things like do a blog, take a yoga class, go to the gym, edit two chapters from my book, whatever it is, four things. And if I get three or four of them done at the end of the day, I feel good. That's my day. I'm good. I'm complete. This is all I could have done today. It's, and in many cases, it's more than I would have done otherwise because I called it out. And, you know, and it's there's a lot of self-care in that. There's a lot of what would make me – this is about me feeling awesome at the end of the day. And it just so happens that I believe in contribution and back to the community and growth. So, you know, my book is something that I see as a contribution to the conversation that so many of us are hungry for. Me taking yoga is a contribution in a sense. If I show up strong, if I show up in my fullness, if I show up healthy, then I can just be that much more of service to humanity, to my friends, to my family, to my community. That's been a way, that's a way that I really have been able to feel good every single day without getting crazy. Because as an entrepreneur and a writer and all doing all these projects, it's so easy to be overwhelmed by all that's on my plate. And I can get through the, I can do a lot of work in a day and not have any sense of accomplishment. So by calling out these three or four wins and by nailing them and I mean, I literally get to the end of the day, and if it's 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock, then I can totally check out, watch a movie, do whatever, and really feel at peace that I won. I won my day. I won my day. Right. And all that means is I feel good about how I showed up today, what I brought to the world, what I did for myself, for my life, or maybe for other whatever. And that's enough. It's so simple, and that's all I get. I don't get tomorrow. I just get today.
Well, I have to. I hate doing this because I feel so rude. But Blog Talk has changed their format, so I can't secretly increase our time like I've been able to do in the past.
So
they're
rude.
Definitely getting an email
rude.
From me. Two things quickly. One, I want to make sure that everybody knows how much I adore you, Brian Reeves. ManagingTheMagic.com. Go visit him, harass him. Have fun
Please.
Watching his videos. Listen to what Aya has to say. This is really, really, really great
Thank
stuff
you,
that
Rocky.
You're doing. So I am grateful
Thank
to
you.
Rocky. You're welcome, my friend. What I would like you to
and
do is spend like 60 seconds telling us the one thing that you want internationally everybody to do, know, get out of today's show, because that's really the whole purpose is for us to inspire, motivate, and raise higher the vibration of people.
Yeah. I like that how we started off. Life is messy. Stop trying to not get it all over you. Have fun with your life. Just enjoy every day. Go out. If you're just make sure that you're taking care of yourself and get it all over you. Get it all over you. Throw yourself into your life and get that juicy gunk all over you. Be slimed and slime with love, with joy, with appreciation. But, man, it's going to be over so quickly. It's going to be over so fast. So slime yourself with life.
Perfect. I love that. That's
Rusty.
Awesome. I'm a puddle jumper myself. So this is totally cool. We're very like-minded, and I'm grateful that we circled around and connected. So please.
I look forward to that cocktail.
Huh?
I look forward to that cocktail someday.
Absolutely. And definitely have your person email my person because I'd like to have you on Sunday night sometime next year because it's a different audience.
Okay. Great.
All right. Big hug to you, my friend.
Thank you so much, Rusty. You as well.
All right, Brian.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Happy holidays. Bye. Oh, what a wonderful, fabulous, sweet soul. Just love, love, love him. If we could clone, we'd clone more of him. So now we know how to manage our magic and to become more secure about not only our sexuality, but our individuality, our spirituality, our emotionality, and all of the allities, including reality, that you can possibly think of. And if there were more people like Brian out there, I would have a show every day of the week because I just love not only his motivation, his excitement, his enthusiasm, and also what he brings to the table. I'm speaking very fast because I have about 30 seconds left, and I just want to let you know that Chris Assad from Toronto, a beautiful, powerful, motivational singer, songwriter, and I'm becoming a fan of his, will be on next week to celebrate Thanksgiving week. He's incredible. His name is Chris Assad, so Google him. And we'll learn more about him. But until then, know how much I love you. I think you're beautiful. You're amazing, and you're the reason why I walk this journey. You and I holding hands throughout this world, learning, observing, motivating, and inspiring. Until next week.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.